WMFO. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. My name is Arthur. It's the 23rd of February, 2020. This show is pre-recorded. I decided on it last minute because I don't feel like walking my dog early, an hour and a half earlier in the morning. Just because Russia might invade Ukraine, I figured I'd start the show off with Cloak and Dagger. This is the actual first Cloak and Dagger episode titled File 2218 with an original air date of the 7th of May, 1950.
Are you willing to undertake a dangerous mission for the United States, knowing in advance you may never return alive?
What you have just heard is a question asked during the war of agents of the OSS, ordinary citizens who to this question answered, yes. We have the honor at this time to present a former OSS officer, co-author of the book Cloak and Dagger, upon which this series is based, Colonel Corey Ford.
Thank you. OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, was America's top secret intelligence agency during the war. It was this country's first all-out effort in black warfare, dropping undercover operators behind enemy lines, organizing local partisans to blow bridges and dynamite tunnels, outwitting the best spy systems of Europe and Asia. The success of OSS is known. But the story behind that success, the story of the everyday, average Americans of every race and creed and color who risked their lives knowing all too well that if they were caught, they would face torture and probably death, is what Alastair MacBain and I have tried to tell in Cloak and Dagger. We feel it is a story in which every American can take deep pride.
The National Broadcasting Company takes you behind the scenes of a war that nobody knew. This is
Cloak and Dagger.
My name is Friedrich Schmidt. I'm a German soldier. I had a medical discharge from the army. I was in the 268th Infantry Division. My family was killed in an air raid near Berlin. My name is Friedrich Schmidt. I'm a German soldier. Repeat it over and over again so I won't forget. My name is Friedrich Schmidt. Where did I go wrong? Think back and remember. From the beginning. Everything the colonel told me to remember.
Remember, Frank, from now on you'll be Friedrich Schmidt, German soldier. You have your military pass, forged signatures of adjutants, hospital certificates, ration coupons, permit to travel. You know what to do.
Yes, Colonel. Carl and I parachute behind the enemy lines in Austria. We radio back information on the strength and location of German troops around Innsbruck.
You realize there'll be no help from headquarters? No contact waiting for you below?
Well, sir, Carl knows the country and his sister is still living there.
I needn't tell you the risk you're taking. Of course, you'll land in American uniform, so in case you're picked up immediately, you'll be treated as prisoners of war. However, later, if you're caught out of uniform in enemy country,
I think I know what to expect, sir.
All right, then. Just one more thing. The information we're after is vital. The Third Army is closing in fast, and we must know what's ahead for them. I'll expect your first message in 10 days.
You'll have it, sir. Oh, and by the way, Colonel.
Yes?
Don't forget to have that package mailed to Rhode Island for me next month. It's my father's birthday.
Cigarette, Frank?
Thanks, Carl. Carl,
Yes, what is it?
About Liesl. About your sister.
Oh, what about her?
You haven't seen her for over 5 years.
Over 6 years.
Well, 6 years is a long time.
Running in.
That's us. Get ready to jump.
What did you want to ask about Liesl?
Oh, nothing. Forget it.
Ready, number one.
Ready?
Jump.
I'll see you downstairs.
Ready, number two.
Ready.
Good luck, Frank. Go.
I heard the crack of the parachute as it snapped open. I looked down. I saw a patch of snow in the valley, spreading wider and wider in the moonlight, like a blot of milk spilled on a kitchen table. And I thought of Carl's sister and the question I didn't have the courage to ask him.
You all right, Frank?
Yeah, I'm okay. Well, we made it. The first step.
Yeah.
You got everything? The radio all right?
Just checked it. Nothing broke.
Good.
There goes the plane.
Yeah. Heading back. He's gone. Let's go while it's dark. Sun's starting to come up.
Keep that cape around you. There'll be people on this road soon.
What do you think about that sun?
What about it?
Astronomers must be nuts. That can't be the same sun I used to see back in Providence.
Maybe it isn't. Schlaf nun ein, schlaf nun ein, die Nacht ist da der Morgen.
Hey, what is that? You've been singing that for hours. What is that, a kid's lullaby?
I made it up.
Oh?
Made it up for Liesl when she was a little girl. I used to sing her to sleep with it.
Oh.
Frank.
Yeah?
On the plane, before we jumped, there was something you wanted to ask me about her. What was it?
Listen. Here comes a cart. Watch your cape. Don't let the wind blow it.
Yeah. Heil Hitler. Good morning, Fräulein.
Heil Hitler. Morgen.
How many kilometers until the railroad station?
About 2 kilometers.
Vielen Dank.
Dankeschön.
Good, only two more. This rucksack weighs a ton. Hope there's no standing room on that train.
I hope there aren't too many German officers.
Come on. You know, one thing I like about European trains?
What?
These little compartments. I'd just as soon be closed off in here until we get where we're going.
We've got to get rid of these American uniforms, Frank, as soon as possible.
Well, we just have to find two obliging German soldiers who'll be willing to give up theirs.
That obliging they are not.
Well, so far they've been. Let us have a nice compartment all to ourselves.
Well, there's no guarantee they'll let us keep it that way, you know. I know when they
here.
Oh. Get out your tribal permit and identification now.
Right. Hope those papers are good forgeries.
They better be. Gentlemen, your identification, travel permit, if please.
Yeah, Herr Inspector, yeah.
Now yours, if you please, Herr Lieutenant.
Here you are.
Here are your papers, Herr Lieutenant. They seem to be in order. Dankeschön.
How much longer till we get there?
About 30 minutes.
You think he was suspicious?
Well, he didn't act it. Just the same if anyone else comes. If you have to take off your cape, take it off in one motion. Your jacket with it. We might get away with a khaki shirt.
Our luck's held out so far. Maybe nobody will come.
Let's hope so. Here comes company.
Here comes trouble.
May I share your compartment, gentlemen?
Yeah, of course, Herr Hauptmann.
It's stuffy in here. Why don't you remove your capes?
Well, it was so cold in the snow country. We're both of us just back from there.
It will take us time to thaw out.
Join me in some snaps, gentlemen.
Danke.
And you?
Dankeschön.
Ach, these trains. Either too stuffy or too drafty. They're all badly on down since the war. Are you warmer now?
Oh, much.
Then remove your capes. I perspire looking at you.
Well,
Go on, take them off.
The Hauptmann is right. It is hot.
Better. Yeah, much better. Are you going to Salzburg?
No. Insing.
Sherwood. You must forgive me. Perhaps it's the heat. Perhaps too much of this bottle. I'm going to stretch out in the empty compartment next door. I'd appreciate it if you gentlemen would wake me when we get off at your station.
Well, I will be happy to.
Well, then I'll see you again.
You'll see me again and soon, Frank. Wait here with the radio.
What are you going to do?
Our friend was warm. I'll help him out by relieving him of his uniform.
No, Carl.
No. You'll find his body before we get to Insing.
Listen to me. They'll find it on the roadbed 2 days from now.
No, Carl. You can't take that risk.
One of us in German uniform would help. Wait here.
Kindly raise your hands. I was not so drunk as either of you thought. It's too bad about your friend. An unfortunate accident. He fell from the train. A pity.
It was as if I were standing 3 feet behind myself, watching myself knock the Luger out of his hand, watch my fingers go around his throat. He gave a few convulsive jerks, and then he was still. In his hand, he held a button he had ripped from my shirt. For some reason, I reached down and I took it from him. The next few minutes, I worked fast. The train was slowing down. I stuffed my uniform into the rucksack where the radio was and borrowed his. It wasn't a perfect fit, but German uniforms never are. And this German wouldn't be needing his anymore. I opened the door of the compartment and for the second time that day, jumped to German soil. Think slowly now. Somewhere from that moment on, I made the mistake. Where did I go wrong? Where did I make that mistake?
You've made a mistake, Herr Leutnant. My brother is not in Austria.
Please listen to me. Carl was with me. We were both coming here together before the accident on the train.
You're mistaken. My brother's not in Austria.
Liesel, I'm taking a chance coming here at all. I only have Carl's word that you'll help me.
My brother is not in Austria.
Look, I'm tired. I'm hungry. Liesel, poor Carl.
There's not much to eat. Some bread and some soup. Sit down. I'll bring it to you.
I watched Carl's sister as she went over to the stove. She was small and dark, and her hair was cut short and brushed back. It was fine, like soft baby hair. I felt so tired, I wanted to brush my face against it.
Here's your soup.
Danke schön.
There's more in the pot if you want it. I'll be back.
Where are you going?
There's someone you might like to meet. A contact. I'll get him. Stay here and eat. I'll be right back. I see you've finished the soup.
Yeah. I hope it isn't all you have.
Oh, no, no, no. It's all right.
Where's your friend?
Friend? Oh, you mean, well, he's coming. He's coming soon.
Good. Carl said you'd be in touch with the Austrian partisans. I need help, Liesel. I need all the help I can get.
My friend should be here any minute. I think I'll wash the dishes now. Since everything around us is in such disorder, I like to keep some order about myself.
Here, I'll wipe. Do you mind?
If you like.
Why does this seem so funny?
What?
What's happened to the world when you start taking the crazy things for granted and the ordinary things seem out of tune with the rest of living? Like
watching a woman doing the dishes, helping her.
You don't seem tired anymore.
No, I feel fine now. Fine. Schlaf nun ein, schlaf nun ein. Nacht ist da.
Morgen.
How did you know that song?
Carl. Carl was singing it.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, Liesl, what is it? You're pale as a ghost.
I didn't know. Oh, Lord, I didn't know.
You didn't know what? What are you talking about?
The Gestapo is coming. I told them you were here.
What did you say?
The Commandant, Gubner, he suspected me for a long time, but he's had no proof. I thought he had sent you to trick me. I was afraid.
Are you telling me the truth?
Yes.
Are you telling me the truth now?
I swear.
I'll shake it out of you.
Oh, you've got to trust me. You have no one else to turn to now. You've got to trust me. Oh, you've got to trust me.
I should kill you. I ought to kill you.
Now, listen to me. You can get out of the back door now if you want. Oh, but no, you won't get farther. Oh, you better go down there to the cellar and trust me.
Open up in there.
I have no choice.
Quick, 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 that door. It leads to the cellar. Go quickly.
Open up!
In a minute.
Well, where is he?
Gone.
Gone? What do you mean, gone?
Well, I tried to keep him here. I couldn't without arousing his suspicion.
Yeah.
So I,
Yeah?
Well, you asked me not to do that, remember?
Yeah, go on.
Well, he was only passing through. He said he had a friend in the mountains. In a hut in the mountains. He told me where it was.
You'll take us then, now.
Of course.
Sergeant.
Just follow me.
Round up the men.
Yeah, here, come along.
After you, Liesl. I needn't tell you, you're doing a great service for the fatherland.
Take your hands off me. I've given enough proof of my loyalty.
Barbara?
Yes?
Any word from Frank or Carl yet?
No, Colonel, nothing.
Oh, something hit a snag. It's been 12 days since they jumped. Well, let me know.
Wait a minute. Here's something now.
2345. Brooklyn calling. All well.
That's it. Brooklyn. That's
Brooklyn.
The code name.
Hey, he's coming through clear.
Time is now 2345.
Huh?
Come in. Over.
Dodger to Brooklyn. We hear you. Over.
Average 14 inches snowfall nightly.
Take this down.
Yes.
Average 14 trains a night being assembled.
Carrying sugar to Dixie.
Carrying supplies to southern German front.
All snow jamming Grand Canyon.
All trains routed by Vorarlberg Tunnel.
Juniors gaining weight. Over.
Wehrmacht gathering strength. Corporal, let me have that radio. Dodger to Brooklyn. Making this fast. Sending it in clear. Imperative, learn within 2 weeks. Disposition of all airborne troops and units within your area. Good night. Good luck. Over.
Wilco, keep the home fires burning. Good night. Over and out. Well, that's the first one, Liesl. They got it. I haven't got much time. You heard him just 2 weeks.
Oh, don't worry. We'll have the information.
How nice it must be to be Liesl. So confident, so cool and sure.
But I'm not. I'm afraid. I don't sleep at night. I'm afraid all the time. Oh, Freddy.
Liesl. From the night I first came there and crawled into the corner of that damp cellar while she led the Gestapo on a merry chase through the mountains, Liesl and I worked hard. My radio aerial was set up, hidden, lost in a mass of clotheslines. Together we rounded up Austrian partisans. Where did I go wrong?
So you are Liesl's cousin, Freddy.
Ja, Herr Kommandant. I am Liesl's cousin.
Would you like some wine, Commandant?
Danke schön. I didn't know Liesel had a cousin from Berlin. We knew she had a brother, Carl.
Well, Liesel and I never mentioned Carl, Herr Kommandant. We're loyal Nazis.
Ah, yes. Prost.
Prost.
I suppose she told you what happened to her a few days before you came.
Some more wine, Commandant.
I haven't finished this glass yet, Liesel. You seem nervous.
Oh, it's such an honor having you visit us here.
Liesel. You know, Herr Leutnant, your little cousin has been much nicer to me lately. I tried to convince her for some time that there are advantages to being friendly with the right people. I suppose she told you about the American spy who came here over a week ago.
I find that hard to believe.
I'm not sure what he was. He was in German uniform, and he may have been a deserter.
Possibly. In any case, we had a long search for nothing that night. We found no trace of him. You say you have a medical discharge, Herr Leutnant?
Yeah, Herr Kommandant. Hmm? The rest of my family was bombed out in Berlin.
Oh, yes.
I had no place to go, no one else to come to, so I came here.
Strictly a matter of regulations. May I see your papers? Your papers, Herr Leutnant?
I have them here. Here you are.
Yes. You know, Herr Leutnant, this is the first time I've seen one of these filled out correctly. Thank you for the wine, Liesel. With your permission, I'll come back again.
Brooklyn to Dodger. Heavy shipment of pianos to Dixie. Brooklyn to Dodger. Bricklayers Union schedule heavy meeting in Dixie. Brooklyn to Dodger. Maybe slight delay. Home team will travel. Over and out.
What's the matter, Colonel?
They must be closing in on him. Home team will travel. That means he's got to move the radio.
I'm going with you, Freddy.
No, 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 you're not, Liesel. You're going to stay here. If we both leave when I move the radio, Gubner's sure to be suspicious.
But, Freddy...
You go to Fritz Heimer. Tell him to send a courier to the other town. Tell him I'll be there tomorrow night.
All right, anything you say. Here. Let me sew on that button for you.
No, no, it's all right. I'll do it. Take my mind off things.
You're tired. You've worked too hard. If the Allied Army's eyes close, as you think, maybe it'll all be over soon. I'll be back.
Liesel? Oh.
Forgive me for just walking in, Herr Leutnant.
Good evening, Herr Kommandant.
The door was unlatched.
It's all right, Herr Kommandant.
I was just passing. I wanted to say hello to your little cousin and invite her to dinner at my house tomorrow night. You think perhaps she will come this time?
Perhaps, Herr Kommandant. Women are never very easy to figure.
No. No, you're right there. What are you doing? Don't let me interrupt you.
Oh, just this button. It came off.
So I see. Army training is so valuable. It teaches you so many things. Even sewing on a button.
I'll tell Liesel you were here.
That's very obliging of you. Only I believe you will not be in a position to tell her anything.
What's that?
You have made just the little slip I have been waiting for you to make. You are under arrest, Friedrich Schmidt.
So many things to remember.
An American cigarette could give me away, an English match, laundry marks, some clothing. Cut him out, patch him up, a little... Yes. Yes. Now I know where I made the mistake. The button. Americans sew them on in crisscross, Europeans in parallel. I was nervous and I forgot the button, and Gubner saw me.
Get up. Come with me. You are wanted for more questioning.
Your name. Your objective. Who sent you? Where are the American armies?
My name is Friedrich Schmidt.
Your name.
The commandant asked your name.
Your objective.
Your objective.
Who sent you?
Who sent you?
Where are the American armies?
My name is Friedrich Schmidt. I'm a German soldier.
Oh, God, throw him back in his cell.
Sleep. Try to sleep. Remember to lie when they come to take me out again for questioning. I wonder if Liesl got away.
You're going on a journey, Schmidt. To another camp where they have even more persuasive ways of making you talk. I shall escort you there myself.
My name is...
Get up! I said get up! Driver, stop at the tavern on the right.
Yeah, Herr Kommandant.
It's a pity, Schmidt. We shall share no more wine and little cakes with Liesl. I have something else in store for Liesl when I catch up with her. Her cousin. I'll be only a few minutes, driver. You're not to speak to the prisoner while I'm gone. Do you understand?
Yeah, Herr Kommandant.
Frank, listen. He won't catch up with Liesl because she's with friends.
Carl!
So you think a little fall from a train could kill me?
Carl!
Herr Gubner wants to know where the American armies are. He'll find out soon enough. It was your messages, Frank, that brought them where they are.
Carl, I don't believe it.
Listen to me, Frank. Listen to me. Our armies walked right into that Dixie front you told them about in your messages. Right now, they're only 20 miles north. I've got 1,500 partisans organized and ready to surrender the whole town and the mayor when they get there.
It's impossible.
You'll see.
How did...
You mean, but listen now. At the next fork of the road, there are friends waiting to take us through to the army. The three of us.
Three of us?
Yes. I imagine you have a few scores to settle on the way with Herr Gubner.
It wasn't coincidence, but a forged transfer that made Carl driver of that car. It wasn't luck, but carefully planned inside information that told the OSS exactly where Frank Baker was. It led to his release that closed the drawer finally on file number 2218 with the words, "Mission accomplished."
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Hey, Paul, what are you listening to?
I'm listening to Arthur's Grand Hour on WMFO 91.5 FM, Medford. Tough, free-form radio.
After preceding that station ID / show drop-in, we heard the FCC obligation, and prior to that was episode 1 of Cloak and Dagger, titled File 2218, with an original air date of the 7th of May, 1950. Thought I'd get that in there. You know, if there's war brewing, I've always said what happens after a pandemic, but anyway, to conclude February and Black History Month, I'm going to play an episode of Destination Freedom. This one is titled Arctic Autograph, with an original air date of the 22nd of August, 1948. Again, Destination Freedom was created and written by Richard Durham. It was broadcast from the June 1948 to August 1950 on WMAQ in Chicago with an all-black ensemble. Again, my name is Arthur. This is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Tufts, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio in Medford. Thanks for listening.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. And before I'd be a slave, I'd be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
Destination Freedom. The Chicago Defender and station WMAQ bring you Destination Freedom, a new radio series dramatizing the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, interwoven in the pageant of history and a part of America's own Destination Freedom. Today, Destination Freedom tells the story of Matthew Henson, the first man to reach the North Pole, in a chapter titled Arctic Autograph.
My name is Matthew Henson. I was named after a man who helped write the gospel. All I wrote was my name. I wrote my name on the North Pole. It was the year 1906. An April day when flowers were beginning to bloom at home. I was on the Arctic ice past the northern lights, near the home of the north wind, where the storms began and where the midnight sun rolled high on the horizon. I had marched with the expedition to a place near the roof of the world and dropped down under the snow with my sled, dogs, and rations and slept until I thought I heard the wind calling my name.
Matthew! Hey, Matt! Where are you?
I looked out of the igloo. I saw a man with his skin cracked by the cold. A halo of fur around his face. Ice under his feet. Fire in his eyes. It was Commander Peary.
Matt! Come out here!
Commander Peary! What's happened? You look like the world's come to an end.
It has, Matt. We've come to that.
Well, now, Commander, it's cold, I know, but...
We've come to the end of the world, don't you see? This time, we've done it. Right now, Matt, we stand within reach of the North Pole.
You're sure?
Look on the map. Well, I've found our position. I've checked it. Here we stand. There's the North Pole, 50 miles from us. One strong march, and we'll reach it.
It's hard to believe.
After 23 years, I know. We've seen it snatched from us again and again. This time, we'll stake everything. We'll strip down to two teams. We'll take just enough rations to carry us.
Two teams?
You'll drive one, I'll drive the other one. Just as we've always done.
I understand.
It's up to us now. We've tried four times. This is the last try. We're not as young as we were 20 years ago, Matt.
When do we leave?
When the wind goes down. Take two of the Eskimos with you, Asa and Seago. Two will come with me.
Is that all?
This time, there's no turning back until we find the pole. It's the last undiscovered region of the world. They say it's suicide, sure death to try to get there. This is my last try, Matt. I'm never going back until I've found it.
Well, I'm with you. You know that.
Yes, I know it. Go on, fix your sleds. I'll see you off.
I remember the cold wind cut through my clothes, but I was warm inside. I stood behind the dogs and sled and gripped my whip. The ice stretched out like a white desert ahead of me. Commander Peary stood by me and said,
"Look ahead, Matt. Don't look back on the old years. Go on. Make this the beginning."
I remember. The snow was like fine dust. It gagged and choked me so I couldn't speak. I swung the whip high over the dogs.
Smash on!
I remember not looking back at the man behind me as the sled shot over the rough ice and took me north, always north. I remember feeling alone in a world no man had seen before and wondering what brought me there. And I began to look back for a beginning. I looked back in my life for the beginning of the urge that drove me on. Was it in my last trip, when I had come close to death 2 years ago, when I came sledding over the ice with Asa the Eskimo, straining to reach the pole? That was 2 years ago, and 200 miles farther south.
Mash!
Ice was groaning and cracking under the sled. All I saw was one goal, one aim, and I went on until the Eskimo cut in behind me and yelled to the dog.
Hook! Hook! Hold up! What are you doing?
Kokoya say stop. This is far as we can go.
Asa, this is 200 miles from where we're going. Out of my way. Commander Peary is behind us. We've got to open a trail.
Kokoya warns us. Go no further. Kokoya guards the north. You closer than any man has come. He shakes the ice.
He was trembling as if Kokoya, the god of the ice, did watch us. And I thought of lost years fighting to come this close to the pole. And I pushed him aside and struck out at the dogs.
No! Kokoya watching! Stop!
I shook him off and pushed the sled on. It leaped over a rough patch of ice and slid on its back. And before I could straighten it, there was a sound like thunder. The ice split. Dogs and rations and sled dropped through a gap in the ice. I was sinking, grabbing for a piece of solid ice when I felt myself lifted up and out of the water. Asa had pulled me out. Sled and dogs were gone. A crack as wide as a river kept us from the other side. Still, I was anxious to go ahead. I felt as if this was my last chance. When Asa spoke,
"I told you, Kokoya say, go no further."
"When I get another sled and dogs, we're going on. When the commander comes..."
"The Kabruna coming now. Kokoya tell him same thing."
Commander Peary came up with his team, and he was restless too. We tried to go over young ice, freezing over the gap, but it was weak, and we waited until the thunder came again. The ice behind us had split. We were locked on a raft of ice. There was no going forward, no going back. And Asa said,
You see, it's useless. Kokoya will hold us here until you say you go back. Tell him you go back.
Commander Peary looked beaten, cold, and he said,
"Tell your god we'll wait until the ice freezes over. Then go on."
It seemed ages before we were freed from the ice. We were beaten and went home. But time had seemed even longer, many years before that, when we were lost in the north of Greenland. We stumbled behind the sleds, cold, hungry, the dogs too weak to pull us. I wondered what kept us going.
"Hold up, Matt. Don't stumble. Keep your eyes open for something alive, something we can eat."
"There's no use going on. The further we go, weaker we get."
"Stand still, and in an hour the snow will bury you. Keep moving, keep moving. Look! Get the gun.
Gun? What?
Over there, on your left. See him coming?"
Yes.
"A polar bear. We're saved."
He was right. Coming toward us was a bear, enough to feed us and the dogs for a week. I reached for the gun.
"Try to hold it steady, Matt. The wind's with us. He can't tell me here. He's walking by. We've got to hit him."
"Shall I shoot?"
Wait. He's coming on. Wait. Now, lift the gun. Go on.
I'm holding your arm.
I had the gun aimed. We held it together. It shook and trembled as the bear came by. Perry whispered,
"Pull the trigger, Matt. Pull the trigger. Hold the gun up."
We tried to steady the sight. I squeezed the trigger. We missed. The bear lumbered out of sight.
You missed the last chance we had. You missed.
If you hadn't jerked my arm, I would have hit him.
You were aiming too high.
You jerked the gun down. You shouldn't have grabbed
me. I did what I could. Take your hands off me.
Take yours off me.
We stood there in the cold. Two lost men clutching at each other. Hunger biting us, gnawing at our nerves. We stood fighting until we heard the dogs growl. We dropped our grip. The dogs had come close to us, waiting, watching, waiting for us to fight.
They're hungrier than we are. They're waiting for us to...
Yes. Wouldn't it be better if...
we ate them instead of fighting and letting them eat us? It would.
I gathered my strength and went to my pack and took out a hatchet. When I had finished, I looked up and saw the worried face of Peary. I snapped at him. You wonder if you can stomach the dogs?
No. I was wondering what we'll eat after the last dog is gone.
Fortunately, we never had to find an answer. We were the lost who had found our way out of the snow. But I knew it was not this that pushed me on. So I searched further back, back to many years before the time of hunger. And I remembered the expedition to the tip of Greenland. We were new to the snow. We were with an old explorer, Peavy. He had gone ahead and reached the cliff. We thought we had discovered the North Pole. We heard him call us.
Peavy! Henson! Look at this!
What is it?
Look!
What do you see, man? What is it?
What have you found, Peavy? What is it?
I found we're fools.
What are you talking about?
We've been fighting through this snow for 2 years. 2 years searching for the North Pole. And look. Look down there.
We looked down and saw that the Greenland, the map makers believed, ended at the North Pole, actually stopped 500 miles from it. Down there was a giant ocean of ice, a white sea stretching out into space. Peary was satisfied.
At last we know.
Know what? No, we've wasted our lives getting nowhere.
We know now that the only way to reach the North Pole is over that ocean of ice. No one knew that before.
No man will live to reach it.
We'll reach it, Peavy.
You'll reach it without me. Ocean ice will split and crack when the tide changes. This one's hundreds of miles wide and treacherous all the way. It'd be exposed to winds and storms and snow. Oh, I've given all I had to get this far. I'm going back.
We'll all go back. But I'll come again.
But why? Haven't you been beaten enough? Why do you keep coming back? What's out there?
Something I want. I'll get it. Will you come with me, Matt?
Well, I've got to come back.
You? Why? Why, Matt?
I don't know. There's something about the Arctic that pulls me back to it. The ice is in my veins, I guess. I don't really remember how it got there. But I'll come back until I find out. I'll come back. I remember the way the wind blew that day on top of the cliff, 500 miles behind the North Pole. Even then, I wondered what drove me to spend seasons working at odd jobs at home while the expedition ships were in dock. And I wondered if it was the laughter of a woman years before the trip with Peavy that had pushed me on. The North Pole then was but a fantasy to everyone. When I quit a job in a tavern to make my second trip.
Yeah? What you knocking for, Matt? Why, you're all dressed up like you're leaving the job.
I am, Bertha. I told you and the boss this morning I'm going.
Oh, you ain't serious. You mean you're really going to that North Pole?
Yeah. Is that so funny?
It's a enough to kill me dead. Wait till I tell the boss. Hey, Joe. Joe, come up here. Matt's quitting again.
What's that, Bertha?
Matt, he is going up to the North Pole with the, whatchamacallit.
With that old weather-beaten fanatic, Perry? The guy you read about in the paper?
That's the guy.
You don't mean it. There ain't no future in that ice. You got a future here, boy.
Sorry, but the ship leaves tonight.
Now, look, Matt, somebody's giving you a bum steer on this North Pole racket. Every jackleg navigator and his brother's planning to discover the North Pole. It's the rage. Let it cool off. Don't be a sucker. Nature's against you.
Nature?
Yeah, you ain't fitted for real cold weather. Ain't no Negro can stand the Arctic. That's the scientific fact.
That's superstition.
Now, look, I know my science.
I know myself. I'll be going.
No, wait, madam. Bertha here's right. You got a good job here. Stay where it's warm. That Perry's crazy. Everybody knows it. Why, I was just reading the other day, but... Hey, Matt. Matt.
He ain't listening, Joe. He's just walking off. He must be walking off again to the North Pole to see Santa Claus.
Yes, I remember the laughing. But it was not then that the urge began. It was even before that morning when, as a young man, I clerked in a haberdasher's shop. I was checking my stock, not noticing that a customer had come up behind me till I turned. He was looking at me in an odd way. He was Lieutenant Perry. Can I help you, sir?
Yes, I'd like a hat.
Uh-huh. Something for hot weather. Panama?
No, I'd like something for cold weather. I'm leaving town.
Oh, cold. All right. I'll see what we have. Now, here's a heavy felt.
Mm-hmm. Felt? I'm afraid won't do. Anything else?
Here's a good wool that just come in.
No, that's not warm enough either. Oh.
Well, do you mind telling me just how cold you expect it to get?
About 45, I suppose.
45?
45 below. I'm going to the North Pole.
Oh, north, I see. Well, I guess I can't help you much.
No, thanks anyway.
It's all right. Mister.
Yes?
This North Pole you're going to, would you mind telling me if anything else will help you besides a fur cap?
Well, I need a good sailor.
Well, I've sailed.
A navigator?
I know the compass.
I need someone who's got a reason of his own for devoting his life to discovering the North Pole.
I've got that reason.
Then come to my ship tomorrow. Bring your reason with you.
I remember going and talking to the determined man the next day and on other days. We sat in a room of maps. His eyes would light up whenever he looked at the pole. And he would say,
for 300 years, explorers have tried to unlock the Arctic. All the world's explored except that. I'll tell you my reason for fighting to be the first to open it. You tell me yours.
Go on.
I'm not saying I'm acting only because of love for science. I want to add to the knowledge in the world. It's true, but since I was a child, since I heard of Columbus, I've wanted to do something to equal his discovery. The only thing that's left is to find a spot on the earth where there's no longitude, no latitude, no east, no west, where you stand directly under the North Star. That's the North Pole. I'm an engineer. But without a man like you who's got the skill and strength to survive the winters and break open the trails, I may never make it. I can't pay you for your help. There'll be dangers. Hunger, maybe. But there's no money in explorations.
What good will money do me at the North Pole?
You seem to feel the same as I do about it. How long have you wanted to reach the pole?
It's been a long time. Long, long time. I'll tell you about it. And then I remembered the origin of the urge that had driven me on. It came 30 years before I'd ever seen a piece of ice. It began on a warm day on a farm in Maryland. I was a boy of 11. I was planting seeds while my father plowed and my mother talked to him.
Saul, listen to me. They said they'd come back after you. Don't you hear me?
I hear you, Sarah. And I've said no one is running me off my own land.
But, Saul, there's nothing you can do.
Hush, Sarah. Matthew is listening. Don't upset him. Get up there, Mule. Get up there. Huh. You keeping up, Matthew?
I'm trying to, Paul. I'm trying to.
That's it. Drop the seeds in. You're going to be the best farmer in the South when you grow up. Ain't you, Matthew?
Yeah, Paul. I'm going to be a farmer.
You'll be no such thing. You were named after your Uncle Matthew, and you're going to preach the gospel like Uncle Matthew.
Yes, ma'am, Ma. I'm going to preach the gospel.
You're teaching the boy wrong, Sarah. We need men to farm the land, not preach.
There won't be any land to farm, Sarah. They're coming back. They said they would.
Some people run from them. Some stand their ground and fight. I'm not running.
You can't fight them with your bare fists, Saul. Every Negro farmer in this part of the country's gone. You're alone.
Gone? Gone where, Ma?
Gone north.
What's up north, Ma?
Freedom.
What's freedom?
Matt, keep quiet and plant the seeds. Now, Sarah, for the last time, I'm not leaving. Because there ain't no place for me to leave to.
Oh, Saul.
Oh, can't you see? Everything I've got's planted in this ground. No Ku Klux Klan or any kind of Klan's pushing me off.
What's a Ku Klux Klan?
Men who hide their faces behind sheets and do in a mob what they wouldn't dare to do alone.
Saul, look.
Oh, I'm looking. I see them.
Saul, run toward the house. They're the same men. They've got guns now.
No, you go to the house. No matter what happens, remember, the land is yours. You got the deeds to it. Now go on and take Matthew.
Oh, Paul, I want to stay here.
Go on with your mother, boy. Go on now. Don't look back. Go on.
Come on, Matthew. Run.
I remember this was the beginning. I remember the urge to look back as I ran with my mother towards the house. And I remember the shot.
Saul. Oh, Saul.
I remember stopping, looking around and seeing nothing but a wet cloud in front of my eyes. Then came the days and nights when I was walking with my mother. I remember asking her,
where are we going, Ma? Where are we going?
North.
What for? How far north?
We're going to be free if we have to get to the North Pole for it. Come on, stay close to me so you don't get lost.
I came on, but through the crowds on the roads, there came a night when I was lost. I kept walking until my shoes were gone, till I came to a strange city and to a harbor where ships were docked. I went aboard one and knocked on the cabin door.
Who are the devils out there this time of night? Huh? You, lad. What the dickens you looking for?
A job.
A job? You're on a real ship, not a toy one, lad. Huh? I've no time to play.
I didn't come to play. I want to work.
Oh, what kind of work can you do?
Well, I could...
Look at you. Your skinny's a rail. You'll be kidnapped by the first wind that blows hard. And you're too young even to be a cabin boy. Oh, be off now.
Please let me stay.
Be off, or I'll be spanking you.
Yes, sir. I'll go.
Oh, wait a while now. Come here, lad. Come here, come here. Let me look at you.
Yes, sir.
Where's your mother and father?
I don't know.
Well, where's your blasted relatives?
I ain't got none.
Come inside. Catch cold out there and you'll be blaming me for it. Oh, sit up there in my bunk. Jump up.
Up here? Like this?
Huh? See here, lad. It's no picnic I'm giving you. You'll pay your way. Nobody's ever got a thing from Captain Childs free, and you'll not break my record.
Yes, sir.
Now then, you ain't strong enough to do real work, but you can lift a pencil, I figure. You can keep the dates in my logs. Here, I'll show you. Look now. Read these numbers. Well, don't sit there with your mouth open. Read aloud.
But I can't read.
You can't read? Well, don't I reckon you can't write either?
No, I guess I ain't much good.
Oh, no, lad. Here now. I'll have no blubbering on my boat now. Hold up your head, eh? I ain't nothing to reading and writing that Captain Childs can't teach you. Besides some navigation, a mechanic's tailoring, cooking, sailing. It's easy, lad.
Yeah?
Sure it is. Look now. We'll start you off right now and prove it. What would you like to write most?
My name.
And just what's your bloomin' name?
Matthew Hansen.
A good seafaring name. Like Matthew in the Bible.
I reckon so.
Good, good. Now I'll show you how writing's done. Get a grip on this chalk, eh?
Like this?
Hold on, now I'll take hold of your fist and guide your hand over the board here and we'll write. M-A-T-T-H-E-W. Matthew. H-E-N-S-O-N. Henson. Now, how's that, laddie?
Oh, is that how my name looks?
Well, more or less. Look a whole lot better when you get the hang of it. Now, we'll just rub it out and start off again.
Don't rub it out.
You don't want it to stay on forever, do you?
I do want it to stay on forever. How do you make it stay on?
Well, you got to sort of do something that makes it stay. Like inventing something or discovering something so people know it's yours. Then it'll stay on.
Is that the only way?
The only way. What do you intend to be anyhow, laddie?
A farmer for my pa, and I'm going to preach the gospel for my mother.
Well, with that ambition, you better get started learning a little reading and writing on your first trip out.
Out? Where are we going?
You're on a whaling ship, laddie. We go north.
How far?
Well, almost north of the north wind.
What's north of the north wind?
The North Pole, I suppose. But don't bother your head, lad. We'll not get that far. No man gets that far. We just travel as far north as we can go.
As far north as we can go. North.
That was the beginning. That was the urge that pushed me on in the face of winds and snow, year after year, slashing at dogs, driving the sleds through storms, while under me the ocean of ice rolled and cracked with the tides. That was the urge that brought me at last to a region where I stopped, took out my instruments, and checked my position. The midnight sun stood on the horizon, never setting, never rising. I had lost all longitude and latitude. I had lost all east and all west. I was north of the north wind. I was standing on the axis of the earth. I was at the North Pole. And I thought of my beginning, of the captain who taught me to write. And I took out my knife and etched my name on the ice. And then I took the hands of the Eskimos who'd come with me and spelled out their names. When Commander Peary came, we planted an American flag. And we men of three races of the world, Mongol, Negro, Caucasian, stood together on the roof of the earth. We had unlocked the Arctic. I remember the medals and the words I heard years later.
For outstanding service to the government of the United States in the field of science, for contributing materially to the success of the expedition in the discovery of the North Pole, the Congress of the United States awards this medal to you, Matthew Hansen.
Yes, my name is Matthew Hansen. I was named after a man who helped write the gospel. All I wrote was my name. I wrote my name on the North Pole.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of Matthew Hansen and Commander Robert E. Peary, first men to reach the North Pole. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Homer Heck.